Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, it's been a while since we've talked to the Investment in the USA, IIUSA group.
That's right, Mark. It's been a while.
The reason that IIUSA is so important is they're the National EB5 Trading Association located in Washington, D.C. So they have their finger on the pulse on what's going on in Capitol Hill, reminding both the elected officials and their staffers the importance of the EB5 program to make sure that, well, our needs are represented. You know, in the past, we've had Peter Joseph on, I think a couple of episodes, and now there's been a changing of the guard.
That's right. And I'd like to welcome Aaron Grau from IIUSA.
Aaron Grau, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you guys.
So welcome, Aaron. Although you haven't been on our show before, we have had, as Mark mentioned, IIUSA on previously. And our listeners are aware of the prestige. Well, some of our listeners, I think we have some new listeners who are aware of the prestige of IIUSA. So what made you decide to become the new executive director?
Well, thank you for asking. And I'll be straightforward and tell you that it was IIUSA's role in economic development in the United States. Mm-hmm. When I first learned about IIUSA and the EB-5 visa program generally, I was impressed. I was surprised. I had no idea that the U.S. government had a program like this. And then I was a little ashamed of myself for not knowing that it existed.
That's so interesting, Aaron, because I feel that that is the story across the board. I feel like even those who know it don't really know it.
Yeah, you may be right about that. I think that, you know, our experience, even working with folks up on Capitol Hill, when we begin to go door to door to door to meet with all of the new representatives and new staff, and even some of the ones who've been around a long time, hey, we're representing the EB-5 industry. And, you know, look, 9 times out of 10, we'll get a blank look on their face and say, the what? So we educate them and we explain to them what the program does and how it's benefiting them in their congressional districts and in their states.
Aaron, perhaps you can tell the audience a little bit about your background and experience prior coming to IIUSA.
Sure. I'm an attorney. I graduated from law school, many, many years ago.
We're not going to date him. It's been a while.
Please don't. But I ended up cutting my teeth on Capitol Hill. I practiced law for a little while, and I didn't enjoy it. And I moved up to D.C., worked on Capitol Hill for many years, and became introduced to many lobbyists through that experience, many of whom were trade associations. And I was taken with the concept of trade associations and the fact that they have an ability through a large platform to make substantive impacts on policy. So I continued my career by pursuing work with trade associations, and that's really what ultimately led me to reach out to IIUSA.
Well, it's really interesting that we do have a trade association, and this really only came about after the Regional Center program, even though EB-5 itself has been in law for the last 20-something years.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting turn of events. First, we had the EB-5 visa program, which will always be part of, we hope, will always be part of the visa immigration program. But then Congress went a step further 2 years later and established the Regional Center program, which really was a shot in the arm. It was a catalyst for the EB-5 program writ large. And it really began to focus the efforts of foreign investors in meaningful ways across the country. So it was a very productive step that Congress took, and it's a big reason why IIUSA is in existence, to protect and further and improve that program, not only for investors, but also for the communities in the United States that they benefit.
Well, what is really different about the EB-5 program is the fact that it is really all in the private sector, because when you're doing citizenship by investment in other countries, it is the government which is involved. And here we have something totally by the private sector, nothing, no burden on the taxpayer. But as a consequence, Aaron, there are a lot of people out there who are worried where we are now. We've had this uncertainty since 2015. I don't know how many episodes, Mark, we've been talking about the change. It will happen. we're scared to say that now.
We stopped saying it now.
Yeah, people don't believe us. But saying that, Aaron, I know a lot of our viewers will be listening in because they want an update. What is going on in EB-5 right now?
Well, that is the $850,000 question, isn't it?
Well, the $1.3 million, I think.
By the way, note to the listeners, pay attention to these dollar amounts. So they'll play an important role later. I'm sorry, Aaron. Go ahead.
There'll be a quiz at the end of the program, right? I can tell you that, in my opinion, the EB-5 program is going nowhere. And I do believe that the Regional Center program will be reauthorized, probably at first, temporarily through the end of the year. But in the interim, IIUSA is working with other industry representatives on developing a more robust piece of legislation that will extend the EB-5 Regional Center program for up to 6 years, which would give stability to investors. It would give stability to neighborhood programs and projects. It would really do a great deal of good for everyone involved, all the stakeholders. The recent government shutdown didn't help. It sort of threw a few stumbling blocks in our way. But, you know, we're continuing to work at first on our own with other industry stakeholders to develop the appropriate language to take to Congress. And then we've already done the legwork on Capitol Hill to begin introducing what is EB-5, what is this program, so that when we do go to them with a cohesive industry bill, the learning curve for those new staffers and new members of Congress will be flat, and we'll have an opportunity to push this forward. I'm always hesitant to put a timeline on something like that, but I can tell you that we're closer than we ever have been, in large part because all of the industry stakeholders realize the importance of making this happen and working together.
Yeah, we're hitting a rocky path in EB-5 right now, Aaron. I'm sure you'll agree. The fact that we need more visas, or we need the visa shakeup, we need to have not just certainty. I actually feel we do need to have the raise in the minimum amount. It would solve a lot of issues. Do we see this happening anytime soon?
No. And that's a very honest and straightforward answer. It's my opinion that the first step to securing additional visas, whether you're talking about not counting the derivatives and allowing more visas for investors and then their families as well, or whether you're talking about increasing the total number of visas allowed for the EB-5 program, the first step to that is going to be reauthorizing the program, demonstrating to Congress that the industry as a whole has its act together, which we do, that we've negotiated the fine points of what the program looks like, which we are, that we've included significant efforts in integrity measures. And I think that once Congress sees all of that and understands that there is a cohesive message and we get this thing passed for 6 years, we'll have strong footing to go back to them and articulate, now that we've done that, this is why we need more visas. That's my opinion. And I think that others would probably disagree, but as a matter of public policy and advocacy strategy, I think that's where we're headed.
Aaron, but really, very realistically, I mean, I've been a member of IIUSA for many, many years, and I do appreciate everything that IIUSA has done. But really, what kind of a voice does IIUSA really have on the Hill?
Well, that's a good question, and I appreciate it. We've got a very strong voice. There are other players that we're beginning to work well with that I don't think IIUSA had the opportunity to work well with before, the Rural Alliance being one of them. And because we have opened our doors and because we have reached out to those industry stakeholders and brought them in and have begun working with them and listening to them, it has bolstered our voice on Capitol Hill. I'm very proud of the lobbyists that we have. two guys who not only know Capitol Hill inside and out, but have a very good understanding of the policy that we're talking about. They're always well received, and we're getting a lot done through their efforts. I call it shoe leather. I mean, we're not simply relying on talking to committee staff and committee staff and committee staff. We're reaching out to people on Capitol Hill who had no idea what EB-5 was, as I mentioned earlier. And that effort is raising our profile. It's flattening the learning curve. People are appreciating what investors are bringing to the U.S. economy, and they're understanding what is happening in their own districts. So to answer your question, we've got a strong voice, and it's getting stronger.
That's good to hear. And I understand as well that IUSA over the last couple of years really has made an effort overseas as well as locally.
Yes, we have. And I mean, I'll give a shout out to the professional on our team, Mackenzie Penton, who has done yeoman's work in establishing relationships and helping to facilitate events overseas in markets like India and Taiwan, Vietnam, all of which are intended not only to identify potential investors, but to educate investors about what the program is, what it means to them, what it means to their family, what they can realistically expect, what will their money be used for, how can they expect a return. I mean, these are questions that reasonable and smart investors are asking. And so our events overseas are intended to address those concerns.
What I've also found, and I've spoken with consulate members overseas, is that unfortunately there are a lot of shabby lawyers or less reputable people, I should say, who are marketing EB-5 that overseas people like to understand, or they need to know, who can we go to? Give me a credible body outside of IUSA who aren't going to answer my questions, who I can rely on. And I think that is a role that IUSA can definitely pick up overseas. And of course, you guys just recently even met with the head of USCIS.
Yes, that was something that I think may have been done in the past, but it was some time ago. I felt it was important to make that introduction. One of our board members, a gentleman named Pat Hogan, who I think you've had on your show before.
A couple of times, yes.
Yeah. You know, he suggested that we do so. And Bob Kraft, who is our chairman, echoed that need. And so when I came on board, one of the first things I did was just pick up the phone and called them. And I said, look, I'm the new guy in town. You know, I could play sort of the naive card for a little while. I said, look, I'm in town and I think it's important that we have a sit down and I'd love to meet you guys. And we're very interested in being able to support the priorities that USCIS has. Under that auspice, they were very welcoming. They said, yeah, come on in. We'd love to talk to you guys. And so when we sat down with them, they were very gracious and they turned to me and they said, essentially, why are you here? And I said, look, we're here because we want to support your priorities. What are your priorities, USCIS? And the resounding answer was integrity. We want to make sure that this program has integrity, that the investors are protected. I said it, but it was echoed around the table among all the board members who were there. We're with you. Let's get that done. And it's a big part of our bill that we're hoping to introduce in the near future.
Thanks, Aaron. I have a request here, though. Well, a lot of our listeners are overseas, and they don't really understand how our government works. And they really don't understand what we mean by going to meet congressional staff on the Hill. So I'm going to ask you to be a little basic here and just explain for our audience sake, how can we as a body change legislation, and what does it really mean by talking to congressional staff? And should we be going to just the staff? Shouldn't we be going to someone higher?
IIUSA, as a trade association, of course, represents many, many, many different people within the EB-5 industry. There are regional centers, but there are also attorneys and accountants and bankers and business plan developers. All of them have a stake in the outcome of policy that helps drive the EB-5 industry. So by bringing all of those people together on the same platform or under one roof, and identifying all of the commonalities that those people want to share with Congress, IIUSA is then able to take those priorities and those messages up to Capitol Hill. Now, when we go there, who do we talk to? And why are we talking to those people? 9 times out of 10, the members of Congress, the chairman of committees or the rank and file members of Congress, are being pulled in about 1,000 different directions at once. So the most appropriate people to talk to in order to have cogent and meaningful conversations about the priorities that the association has defined are their staff, the people who are working for that member of Congress, who are in charge of advising that member of Congress or that senator on EB-5 policy. Keep in mind that a member of Congress is addressing EB-5 policy. He or she may be addressing energy policy, or they may be addressing defense policy. They're everywhere. So you want to go to Capitol Hill and you want to meet with those members of Congress's staffers who are expert in this field and share with them, hey, when you sit down and you talk with your boss, this is what the industry is saying. This is what the industry is saying is important to continue this program. And you always want to backfill that a little bit and explain to them, here's why it's good for you. Here's what's happening in your district. And so what we share with them is not only the policy positions that we feel are best for the program writ large, but we also take time to identify the ways that the policy is benefiting that member of Congress in his or her hometown, in his or her home state. So they realize that the decisions they make on policy are not just impacting foreign investors, they're not just impacting banks and regional centers, they're impacting neighborhoods and constituents that they represent. And that conversation, that back and forth conversation, is critical when it comes time for that member to make a decision about X policy about EB-5. And of course, the big one that we're focused on, extending the program. We want a 6-year reauthorization. We don't want to talk about this again for another 6 years. We want a 6-year reauthorization so we can come back to you again next year and not talk about extending the program. We want to come back to you and talk about increasing the number of visas.
Yeah, but we've had a problem in the past with certain congressional members who really have not been a fan of EB-5. Notably, Senator Grassley was not a fan, rather Chairman Grassley. But right now, we do have a lot of backing. I know Senator Lindsey Graham is quite a fan of the program, along with Chuck Schumer from New York as well.
Chuck Schumer, yes, the minority leader.
So we do have our advocates out there on the Hill. But how do you ensure that the congressional staffers actually do share what you're suggesting, all the information with the rights people, with the senators, when you only have a few minutes to share the most important news and issues? And really, in comparison to everything else, EB-5 is such a small area.
That's always a challenge. And, you know, I would never presume to say to anybody, I promise you that this staffer will pull the senator aside and say X, Y, and Z. Now, that said, you know, the way these conversations are held and with whom they are held, that is to say, it's not just our lobbyists that we bring to Capitol Hill to have these conversations, but we bring people from the district, from the state, who are constituents of the folks with whom we're speaking. And that makes the conversation more meaningful. It drives it home a little bit. And it also makes sure that it's not just some lobbyist carrying the message, hey, look, I'm from your hometown. That helps assure that the message is delivered. And the other way that we do it is by numbers. The more people who are able to weigh in with an email or a call or a letter, the less the staffers are able to ignore it and the less they're able to forget it. We keep things front and center in a respectful way, in a professionally persistent way. We keep things front and center for them so they have a clear understanding that this is a serious issue and it should be discussed with your boss.
So I have a thorny question here. Some people out there, maybe regional centers and some of the stakeholders, feel that IAUSA has a certain leaning towards only one sector. Perhaps it's the middle states, the rural states, and they really don't represent some of the big cities like New York. And there are other bodies which are more for New York, etc. How would you address that?
That is the age-old dilemma and challenge of any trade association you will ever come across. There will always be divergent opinions and stakeholders and characters within an association who miraculously actually are all hoping for the same outcomes, right? They want an extended program. They want increased visas, what have you. It's the challenge of the association to truly reach out to all of the members and make sure that their voices are heard and make sure that their opinions are included and to do their best to identify compromise within the association when it presents itself. It's not easy. It's something that I particularly enjoy doing, but it's not an easy task. And to the extent there are those on Capitol Hill who feel, oh, IIUSA only represents rural, or they only represent urban communities, it's our job to educate them in that regard as well. We represent everybody. And to the extent a rural alliance, for example, wants to establish its own mission and coalesce there, well, we'll work with them too. We are an open door, and I think the challenge is always to simply remind people that an association by its very definition includes divergent interests, and it's our job to make sure everyone gets heard and that their opinion is included in our ultimate policy decision.
Aaron, as this is your first time on our show, I have to subject you to something that I've subjected many people to before. If I gave you a magic wand for you to go bing, bing, and
I was wondering where you're going with this, Mona. I was like, what is she doing? Like, oh, the magic wand. Here we go.
Yeah, and you could have your wishes granted. Please share with us. What would you ask for?
Well, first of all, Mona, my magic wand goes bam, bam, not bing. I have my own, and I'll tell you right now, I would wave my magic wand. And I would wish for two things. I would wish, first of all, that we have a program that lasts forever. And second of all, that the number of visas is increased to 100,000. I can't see a better wish being granted than that. It would allow incredible progress for the U.S. economy, and it would allow incredible investment opportunities for foreign investors. And I can't think of anything more important than that, at least when we're talking about EB-5.
Well, thank you for that, Aaron. You know, the fact that you mentioned that you want the EB-5 to be a forever program, a perpetual program, something that has, well, we'll say limited uncertainty with government organizations. Is it running? Is it not? Is it going to be extended? Is it not? Because honestly, that covers a lot of churn that that Mona and I have heard for a while. You get rid of that, you get rid of a lot of the uncertainty. And a tenfold visa increase from 10,000 to 100,000, well, I'm sure...
That's a lot of visas. That's a lot of investment.
And it's a lot of investment. Whether you count families or not, you know, we're not getting in derivatives. But he's basically saying, like, let's not cap it. Let's not stop money coming into the U.S. Let's not stop American jobs being created. Aaron, I applaud you. That's one of the best uses of Mona's magic wand I've heard. Thank you.
Quite welcome.
And also like to encourage the listener, whether they're involved in the EB-5 industry, or perhaps they're an EB-5 investor, or even if they work in the government or media, to check out the great work that you're doing by heading over to IIUSA.org. To find out how Invest in the USA is actively working with EB-5 shareholders to make the program better now and in the future. Again, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on our show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.